Welcome to the Gen Z Stoic Podcast,
where every week we strive to lead younger generations on a path to virtue through the insight of Stoic teachings and personal stories from our lives as Gen Z Stoics.
Well, I think it is to be said that the first thing that we obviously start with is just the atmosphere around the election. That's the big one. That's kind of just the big starting point, that whether you are supporting Kamala Harris or whether you are supporting Trump or whether you are supporting neither, whether you're kind of in the middle or anything in between or anything outside of that.
Or you just hate the political landscape currently.
Exactly. Which I think, to be fair, a lot of Gen Zers are either on one end of the spectrum or in the idea of this all sucks. Like, everyone sucks.
And cynicism. Cynicism.
Exactly. And so, unfortunately, that's kind of a problem because voting is important and politics are important. And so now that we've reached this, like you said, this cynical view of politics, that kind of is a problem. But we also have people who are very strong supporting both sides, which is good because that means we also still have people who are heavily involved in politics.
Yeah, well, the thing about politics for me is that the political landscape of today's modern world preys upon your emotions. So it sucks for us being a Stoic focused podcast that we have to talk about politics all the time. But if you live in America, it's pretty much central. I think if you live in like France and Italy and Europe as well, if you live anywhere in the world, politics are like central to your life. And when you have such a chaotic, inflammatory landscape of politics like in America and the West where it preys on your emotions, it takes an emotional toll. And so you have to realize being stoic in the face of this emotional toll is actually very valuable. And being stoic in the midst of this is very, very, very difficult. If you're on social media, especially, misinformation and posts that are supposed to rile you up are like landmines that are constantly everywhere, everywhere. And that's kind of what the political rhetoric overall is, right? I mean, we had a political candidate and a former president almost get assassinated. And we have people who want to spout conspiracy theories about it was faked by him. It was a coup by like the FBI or Secret Service or somebody. Or it was a foreign operative, which Thomas Crooks had foreign bank accounts. So maybe. But everywhere in between, there's just conspiracy theories. And the thing about these political candidates is even these tumultuous moments, especially where like one candidate almost gets taken out, another candidate does get taken out, not, you know, shot, but taken out of the race, we have this landscape where the political figures could see, and we can all feel America's heartbeat right now, is really elevated. And so we could take a step back and like be cohesive. But instead, these politicians choose to prey on your emotions again. So in a time when you have the people in power who are preying on your emotional vulnerability, wouldn't it be great if you didn't have any emotional vulnerability in the first place? And to that, I say, enter Stoicism.
Well, it's tough. Because, like you said, because everyone's so riled up all the time now, like, and every politician does this, but they're going to say things that make you support them. And then none of these things are actually going to happen if they get put in office. But it's how they market themselves. It's how they market their campaign. It's all in a lot of it, not all, but a big majority is an appeal, like you said, to the emotional side. Why? Because a big part of marketing is appealing to the emotions of your audience in order to get them to, you know, really resonate with a certain thing that you're discussing. Now, it also sucks because what Stoicism preaches is that there are good and bad on both sides. And what you see now, it's like, if you vote for one side, you're voting to end democracy. If you vote for one side, you're a communist, this and that. And now it's like, oh, well, what do I do? It's not even a approachable topic to talk with someone about anymore, because if you even mention supporting one thing that a certain side supports, then you're labeled as X, Y, and Z, and then you're not seen as really anything else. So not only are we in a very emotional time, but we're also in a time of almost as closed-minded as we've ever been. It's so divided, and we've become so opposed to the other side, whether you're left, right, in the middle, anything in between, that we can't even begin to accept that both sides may have decent ideas. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And interestingly enough, when we are divided like that, we're easily toppled. And so one of the byproducts of this emotional like appeal that we're talking about is the kind of argument based around fear. And I think you can see that from both political parties and from any political party, if you want to think about Europe. We're not familiar with those parties for the most part, but basing it off of America's political landscape, you have one candidate who bases his rhetoric off of the fear of crime, the fear of illegal immigration, and the fear of certain rights being taken away. And the Democratic Party does the same thing, fear of certain rights being taken away. They're different rights, but they're also a fear being taken away, fear of loss of democracy. It's all fear-based. And when you have a society that is based upon all of this fear-mongering, then it's natural for society to be afraid, for society to be anxious. You know, one of the causes that we haven't really talked about of the rise of depression and anxiety, we've talked about a lot of causes for it, but one of the causes that we haven't talked about is the cynicism and this fear that's stoked by politics. And the thing about politics is it's very good to be politically active. Mateo and I, to a certain degree, are both politically active. This year, I've gotten really into political activism. But you also have to realize that at the end of the day, politics doesn't define you. Now, identity politics, you mentioned how Stoicism likes to label things as good, or doesn't like to label things as good as, and bad, but the difference between good and bad and all of that is the labels that we've thrown, where a lot of Democrats believe that Republicans are just simply bad people. And Republicans think that Democrats are woke, idiotic people, also bad people, right? But the truth of the matter is that unless your politics and your political identity revolve around the harming of a certain group, then you aren't a bad person. If you believe in the priority of a set of certain rights over the set of another certain rights, you're not a bad person for that. If you believe in one set of economic policies over another, you're not a bad person for that. But again, the media and politicians and the whole political landscape might want you to believe that the other side is bad. So you have to ask yourself, why stoke this division? Because there certainly has to be an agenda behind it, right? There is an agenda behind everything in this country, everything in the world. And I can't really comment 100% what that agenda is, but I can say to 100% resist this agenda, do not give into the identity politics. And that means not giving into the fear and not giving into the labels. And the easiest way conceivable to me is by subscribing to Stoicism. Stoicism for me, as somebody who is very politically involved, I also don't care at the end of the day. Simply put, there are many, many other things that are more important to worry about than politics. Many other things. So, you know, control politics as much as you can with your vote and your voice. But outside of that, don't demonize the other side and give into fear and give into these arguments and get into debates online and all of this stuff, because it's a waste of time. Because what do we say as Stoics, right? What can we control and what can't we control? Ultimately, we have very, very little influence over politics. We could talk about how politicians are bought and paid for, so our vote maybe doesn't even matter because they care more about the input of lobbyists and donors than they do the average American citizen or average citizen. We could talk about how even when you're thinking about votes in this country, the Electoral College renders some votes meaningless. All of these factors go into the equation of, while I have my vote and my voice, at the end of the day, that's very little influence over the entire political landscape. So why fret over it? Why be anxious over it? Why be depressed over it? Why be angry over it? Those are the emotions that these politicians are espousing in people. And again, the resistance to that is Stoicism, because Stoicism, they were the calmest people in the room. That's why Stoicism became popular in Rome, right? They came into the Senate, they were calm, they were cool, they were collected, and they argued for political standpoints. They argued against taxes. That's how Stoicism started. So Stoicism started out of political activism, but it wasn't angry, in your face, protesting, waving flags, spray painting things, political activism. It was no, cool, calm, collected, let's debate. That's really antithetical to what the current political landscape is. So there needs to be a solution. It seems like everybody says this, but then does the exact opposite of providing a solution. But the solution is to be cool, calm, collected. Stoicism is one path forward to that, and it's a very simple path.
Well, and it's tough, and I like the comment, I guess, on the first point that you made that stands out to me, and it was just the kind of the last point you were making about, you know, spray painting stuff and vandalizing stuff and causing destruction. There is nothing about that on either side of a political spectrum that's appealing. So if your whole goal is to spread your message and you feel like the only way that you can do that is to be societally disruptive, That's a terrible idea. We get it, but that's not appealing. That doesn't make anyone want to work with you and speak with you more. As a matter of fact, it has the opposite effect. We've seen it with protests since you know, especially the COVID era that's become increasingly more popular, it doesn't really make people want to talk to you more, because it makes people kind of walk away and be like, yeah, stay away from that person. They're a little bit crazy. You know, whether it's, I guess, the Black Lives Matter protests that got out of hand, the raiding of the Capitol, or anything like that. All of these make you just not want to talk to the other side and make you not want to compromise. So the first things first, like you said, Stoicism combats this whole identity politics concept, because it allows you to remain calm. And one, your beliefs don't define who you are. They definitely define the choices that you make, but one set of like political beliefs is not going to define who you are as a person. And I remember specifically during the COVID era when it was so rough, because people were like, yeah, I ended a bunch of friendships because this person was politically different than I was. Well, that's stupid. That's a pretty stupid, you know, basis of a friendship. And now we kind of see that more than ever. It's, oh, this person doesn't agree with me on one thing. They must be a fascist. I don't know. Whatever the label is that we're labeling people as, right? And so as we kind of get closer to this election season, and as the heartbeat of America rapidly increases with, you know, like you said, the attempted assassination, and now one of our candidates is dropping out, we're seeing more and more on the media that it's really choose one way or die. Basically, it's like, there is only one way to save America. If you vote the other side, the death of America is sure to happen. So that's not true. First of all, we're fine. Like, we are okay. We're doing pretty good. But it's just the fear mongering that we really can't be giving into. It sucks. And the media doesn't help with that. You know, I did this project my first year of college that was kind of about the media uses sensationalism simply to just promote headlines and content and whatnot and get it out there and get the views. So we have to be pretty realistic when we're looking at the media here. And Stoicism is a great way to do that. It's a great way to see things like from an unbiased point of view and be like, pick out bits and pieces, be like, yeah, that's garbage. That's probably not true. This is good. This is good. And so even if you're not politically active, it's still important to take these values into whatever, I guess, issue or topic that you hold a strong interest in. I guess the reason that we talk about politics a lot is because it's mostly what's talked about in this country, and it's had a really big, I guess, uprise since COVID especially. I don't ever remember politics being this prominent of a social issue until like after COVID when everything happened. But because it's a big issue now, it's very easy to make analogies to it. So that's kind of, I guess, why we're talking about it now, and especially as the election season is upcoming. But we would definitely encourage you, if you are voting in this election, don't be voting based purely off of emotion. That's a terrible idea. Don't be voting for someone simply because you're afraid to vote for the other side. Those aren't good causes. It's very important to be truly informed on what you're voting for and the legitimate consequences that it's going to, you know, yield in the near future, or even in the long-term future, depending on what laws and bills are signed and whatnot.
But when it comes to media, also don't be stupid about it, right? We know that 90% of media is controlled by 6 corporations, right? These corporations are headed by families. When you have such a consolidation of power, because media is power in this country and in really the world, because it influences truly how we view things, don't be stupid. Don't believe everything you see. And don't give in to the emotions that they are clearly trying to provoke. Because again, there's that underlying agenda that we've mentioned a few times on this podcast. There's an underlying agenda to the world order that is seen, especially through media. Look at what we're popularizing. Look at what we're demonizing. There's a quote that I saw today. It's a Christian-based quote. I don't remember exactly who said it. But it said that tolerance, the evil preaches tolerance until it becomes the norm. And then once it becomes the norm, good is extinguished, right? And that's what the agenda is about. It's promoting these evils, which contribute to civil wars and the collapse of societies, the historical collapse of empires, that for some reason the agenda seems to be promoting. Hopefully we can be resilient to that. You know, you have a lot of people who say the West has fallen, and I can certainly see where those arguments get a lot of credibility. But when we talk about the West as an entity, we still have the resilient aspect of ourselves. We still have kind of that distinguishment between good and evil. We still have a lot of Judeo-Christian values, which are found in Stoicism, which are found in Christianity, which are found in a lot of world religions that are commonplace. They're the golden thread that makes a good life. And I think media, especially in the Western world, is trying to disturb that. I don't want to say for what reasons or who's behind it. Again, I will mention that six corporations are behind 90% of media. But just don't be stupid about it. Realize when you're being brainwashed. Realize when you're being taken advantage of. Even when it's something that seems as distant as AT&T or CBS or NBC and the programming and the messaging that they're sending out, even when it seems that distance away from you in terms of personal impact and personal influence, don't be stupid about it. They know what they're doing. They know what they're saying. They know what the messaging is. They know what they'll allow and what they won't, and they know why they're doing it. So instead of becoming emotionally invested in it and allowing them to provoke those emotions, take advantage of you, have control over you, become independent and become an independent thinker so that you aren't stupid and aren't brainwashed by the media. Because that's what's driving a lot of this political atmosphere as well. The second you see Joe Biden drops out, you see 30,000 conspiracy theories flood social media, and you see some media companies choose to promote those conspiracy theories and others shut them down and cry about how great Joe Biden is and be all sad about how great Joe Biden is. I'm not going to sit here and argue whether Joe Biden was great or not, but there's no reason to be crying over a politician who honestly doesn't care about you, hasn't given you a second thought. There's no reason for that other than to evoke emotions, because we all know, as Stoicism preaches, emotions are the weakness of human beings. When you are a slave to your emotions, you're a slave to whoever can control your emotions. And the media is currently who is controlling a lot of America's emotions. So we are slaves to the media. So break the chains of that. Don't be stupid and don't be brainwashed. Simple enough.
And I would like to add, there is a level of emotion, like there's a certain degree of emotion that is exuberated in passion. And so that's not saying, you know, don't be emotional in anything you do. Obviously, if you're passionate about it, about something, you're going to have somewhat of emotion, you know, in that field, whatever it is, in that idea. That's fine. But the bigger picture is you can't let that be the sole dictator of why you choose to do something and why, you know, you support something or whatnot. That's the bigger picture here. Obviously, we're going to feel emotions. It's natural. But if the whole reason you're voting for Trump is because you're terrified that some Democrat is going to walk up to you and like take all your guns away and revoke your right to do everything, do not like think, like use your brain. Okay. Like you're being emotional and you're being stupid. I cannot reiterate that enough. Don't be stupid. That's a great message of today, is use your brain. Now, the whole thing with the media too is, like you said, some choose to cover it. Some choose to not. Whether, you know, you're seeing conspiracy theory, a flooded conspiracy theory page, like For You page on your Instagram, or whether your Instagram page is like the complete opposite, it's like everything that the system believes and you're 100% for that, that's fine. But you just have to really think, even if it's something that you are supporting, is it true or not? Because it takes a lot of courage to understand something that you support may not be correct. Right? That something like a media corporation that supports your beliefs might be kind of bullshitting sometimes. That's the only way I can really put it, is at the end of the day, these big companies have one thing in mind. Well, two things in mind. One, money. Two, just simply control of what you see, right? Why would they do that? Well, I don't know. I'm not at the forefront of these corporations. But if you think that any of these major, major corporations, whether it's the media, whether it's the education system, big pharma, blah, 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 that they really, really care about you, I'm sorry to hurt your feelings, but that's just not how it is. And like you were saying about politicians, politicians typically are more invested in promoting their own campaigns and their own personal interests than having the interests of the American people at the forefront of their minds, right? They will say a lot of things to get votes. And then you will see half of those things never even get discussed or, you know, acted on as soon as they get into office. That should tell you enough. Obviously, sometimes there's a clear black and white picture of probably who's the better person. Well, if you look at things stoically, that's not always the case. If you look at that, if you look at this election stoically, you're like, man, is there a black and white answer on which candidate is better? No, they both suck. Like they suck, and they have sucked since, you know, it was Clinton versus Trump, since it was Biden and Trump. Like it is sucked. Because that was in 2016 when we were still in middle school, was Clinton versus Trump. And then it was Biden and Trump. And now it's, well, it was going to be Biden and Trump again, but now it's Kamala versus Trump. And we're like, dude, are you telling me that these are the best fit people to run our country? I have seen, there are so many bright people out there who just have like a podcast or who just work in like an oil field or something that seem to be way better fit. don't look at things in a black and white lens, because that's not how the world works. That's how the system wants you to think it is. That's how the media portrays things as very black and white, you know, very good and bad. That's not how Stoicism works. A Stoic mindset is never going to say this is good, this is bad. They don't like, the Stoics didn't like using those terms. It was too constricting. You have to look at things for what they are. And obviously, things are going to resonate with your values more. That's fine. You kind of determine what is, I guess, good and bad according to your personal values. But you can't look at things through, you can't look at every single thing as a good thing or a bad thing. Because there are, it's very flexible. It's very, it's kind of like water. It just always flows. It can be anywhere at any time.
Well, and the interesting thing of note for that is, for Gen Z specifically, what was our first election cycle? I feel maybe I was more politically aware and paid attention more than people our age, a lot of people our age. But really, our first exposure to the political system was Donald Trump. That was our first exposure to the political system. And say what you want about Donald Trump, I think we all mostly can agree that he has a sort of chaotic energy about him. And we talk about media sensationalism. Donald Trump is also an entertainer and a sensationalist himself. And so for Gen Z specifically, when all we have known is not necessarily politicians who kept it buttoned up, kept the gloves on so we can believe that they were good people and they had our best interests in heart, Donald Trump kind of took the gloves off for everybody. And so now we have this kind of system that is a bit exposed for the corruption that underlies it. And that's a bit concerning. And, you know, I think if we paid attention, we maybe aren't concerned, right? We have George Bush lying about the weapons of destruction in Iraq and us going into Iraq and subsequently wasting trillions of dollars in the Middle East and wasting tens of thousands of troops' lives. So politicians, even before Trump, haven't been great and have been corrupt. Trump kind of took the gloves off. And so for us, when that's our first exposure as a generation of the political system, it's natural for us to turn to cynicism. And for some of us, that cynicism takes the form of being a conservative and saying the government sucks. We need a small government. Trump is an outsider and he tells the truth. Or it takes the form of cynicism where there are people who are liberal who absolutely hate and despise Donald Trump. They hate his guts. And that's what we've seen. It's kind of that polarization. And it's by one central figure in America, which is interesting to note. So whatever you think of Donald Trump, I think we can agree that there is sort of that chaotic energy there that has kind of taken the gloves off for the political system. And so when we look at like the falls of empires historically, I mean, specifically like the Roman Empire, what was one characteristic of that? It was increasing divide. And that was sensationalized in the Roman Empire as well. And now we have media and much more powerful tools than were available in the Roman Empire who are doing that work for us. They're doing that divide for us. So it's time to like take a step back from that. And our politicians, if they cared about us, would realize that and do that. But instead, they're leaning further into those tools to propagate these messages of, you know, disdain, divide, and this emotional appeal rhetoric. And you're right in the fact that emotions aren't necessarily all bad, but emotional vulnerability, no matter where it is a weakness. We're lying to ourselves if we're saying, oh, having a little bit of emotional vulnerability is useful. It is not. A lot of society wants you to believe that, but that's just so they can control you, right? Why would the people who have the power tell you, hey, if you did this, we don't have power over you? That'd be like the slave owners when there was slavery. That'd be like them handing books, handing them the Declaration of Independence and saying, hey, look, all people are equal, but we still own you. No, what did they do? They took away the ability to learn how to read and write from slaves. That's what they did. Similarly, we have messaging nowadays that says, don't do this. You know, don't do this. Be emotionally vulnerable. Being emotionally weak and emotionally vulnerable as a man is okay. That's what masculinity is about. Why would they say that? Because they know that when you get angry, when you get deeply troubled, when you get depressed, when you're anxious about something, that's when they can take advantage of you. That's when they can most control you and control your actions. So don't give in to that. It's BS. Why would the people in power tell you how to remove the power out of your life? They won't. So you have to take initiative and figure it out for yourself. Stoicism isn't going to make you like this godly figure that's unattached from everything, but it makes it so that you're not vulnerable. It makes it so that you're not weak. it makes it so that when you see a challenge, you're like, oh, I can't do this. I need somebody to help me. I need a government to help me do this. I can't figure this problem out for myself. No, take a step back, take some initiative, grab life by the wheel and drive forward. You can do that. That's simply what Stoicism is saying. We have all this reliance on media to tell us what to think. We have an education system that tells us what to think. Every institution that our generation has largely lost faith in tells us how to think. But instead of realizing and losing our faith because of that, we just say, well, it's not doing its job right now. College isn't giving me a good job right now, so that's why it's bad. No, college is bad because it just teaches you how to think. It doesn't teach you life skills. It doesn't teach you resiliency. The education system doesn't teach you any of that. If it had your best interest in mind, it would be teaching a little bit of philosophy starting at age like 6. But those institutions don't do that because they want you to be reliant upon them. That's why all of the famous people that we see own islands. They go to places where they aren't controlled because they've realized, wow, I'm smart. I'm intelligent. You know, I've got my shit together. Let me go take initiative and I'm going to make some money and I'm going to go pay off people so I can buy my financial freedom. That's why they all talk about financial freedom, is because the bounds of living and the rules that we live by only apply to us if we can't afford to break them. Simply put. And one of the starting points of realizing this is conquering your emotional vulnerability. Because you can be intelligent and really driven, but if you're controlled by anger, then somebody's going to see that in a business deal and is going to prey upon that anger. If you're driven by sadness or some sort of trauma that's happened to you in the past, somebody's going to recreate that set of circumstances to take advantage of you. When we look at the current political landscape, I'm a big proponent of the Second Amendment. I'll admit that openly. I've worn shirts on here that I'm sure many people can connect me to being very pro 2A. What a lot of the rhetoric is, besides just the basic like constitutional arguments around the Second Amendment is the slippery slope argument. And like you just mentioned, right, they're going to take all of your guns and all of your rights away simultaneously. That has happened before. But getting angry over it and then lashing out is what people want you to do. Instead, just be rational about it. Use the constitutional argument. Don't get upset over it. If somebody disagrees, that's fine. But they want to control you with the emotions, with the emotional vulnerability that goes behind your argument. They want to accuse you of having anger issues or having some sort of issue. Don't give in to any of that. The first step to all of this freedom stuff we have and these laws and everything that controls us, breaking out of that, the first step to that, it's just taking control of your emotions. Take control of what's in here so you can conquer what's outside of there. Step number one.
Well, I think it's interesting that you just talk about the control aspect, because the one big thing you always talk about is the dichotomy of control. And so kind of realizing that we have everything switched about what we can and can't control. Like we think that, I don't know, I can't control like the outcome of my college education. Like the system has it decided for me. No, like that's actually the one thing you can control. The one thing you cannot control is what they're teaching you, but what you can control is kind of where you choose to learn. Now, all these big corporations that do want simply you to be relying on them so they can, you know, stay in power, keep reeling in money, whatever you may speculate that their motive is, it is true. And you would be pretty ignorant to disagree with that. You would be pretty ignorant to just say, to sit here and say, like, I work for somebody and I will always work for somebody, but my boss cares, or like the CEO and all these big companies that own my company and whatnot, they all care very deeply about me. They really care about my well-being and, you know, the benefits I get in my 401k and everything that my work provides. Like the big guy at the top sees me as, you know, a very valuable asset. They don't care. At the end of the day, it's really not. And I'm not saying everybody should be an entrepreneur and that everybody should start their own business and work for themselves, because if that were the case, well, then none of the companies would run because nobody would be working for anyone, blah, blah, blah. The point is, though, is taking a step back and, like Bren said, simply just not allowing companies or organizations or anyone to have control over like your emotional levers that kind of guide you one certain way. I mean, if you get angry at a certain topic, that's understandable. But if you let someone know that, if you let that dictate your next action, then people are just going to use that against you, because that's how the world works. People like control. People like to leverage your weaknesses to elevate themselves. That sucks. And if you're going to walk through life all sad, all depressed, all controlled, and thinking you're hopeless, then you're right. You are hopeless. If that's going to be your mindset about it, then absolutely. Now, it kind of sucks being the friend who's like very picky and very, I guess, technical about all this stuff. I guess the quote conspiracy theory friend. It's kind of weird. Now, I'm not saying to give in all conspiracy theories, but don't just be someone who believes everything that, you know, big old CNN tells you, because, you know, they care about us. Don't believe everything that they tell you and just go along and let that dictate your whole life. A lot of the city kids that I met in LA my first year of school, I have never seen it worse. Like, I've never seen people so just controlled by one narrative in their whole lives, and it dictates everything. There is no flexibility. You should hear the things that these people say sometimes. It doesn't matter if it makes absolutely no logical sense. As long as it aligns with one specific narrative, they will defend it until they die. If you've ever seen The Matrix, one of my favorite movies, there's a quote from Morpheus who's like, you gotta watch it. But the quote from Morpheus is like, these people have become so dependent on the system that they will fight to do anything to protect it. Well, that's kind of where we're at. We've become so dependent on the people that control us that we would fight to keep them in power because some people say that it would be easier, that life is easier with them in power. You know what I mean? That sucks. We have no initiative to take. It's riskier to stay where you are and stay controlled than it is to, you know, try and start your own company or start your own life and take control of your own life. It's far riskier to depend on some big corporation to fulfill your life's needs for your entire life, to provide you with enough money, even though we can all clearly see that the negative interest rates in your savings account, your money is depreciating before your eyes. And we also know that the tax system wants people to spend money. It encourages people to spend money. It doesn't want people to save money in accounts. It wants people to go out and spend money. So if you're just storing away your money, for example, like, you know, all the big people say that you should, it's going to waste away. You're going to have no financial power. Why does money matter? Well, like Ren said, the only way to kind of escape the chains is to buy your way out, unfortunately. And that's kind of the sad truth, because Stoicism has never been about, you know, money or your wealth. Has never been about that. But we live in a day and age now where if you truly want to just live freely, you have to buy it. You have to have enough money that you can, like you said, the celebrities buying their own island. Not saying you have to go to that extent, but you have to have enough money that you can live freely without depending on a big corporation to do things for you.
And the thing about that too is Stoicism was founded and flourished in the ancient Greek and ancient Roman society during a time when there wasn't such a concentration of wealth like we see in today's society, where there are billions of dollars and you see like Jeff Bezos and Bill Gates, and there are people who are more wealthy than that who maybe aren't on those lists because they've bought the power to remove themselves from their lists. You know, we talk about the Rothschild family and people like that. Those types of families and that concentration of wealth weren't in existence in ancient Greece and ancient Rome. So you could focus on being indifferent to money because your experience was very democratic and it was more free, I think, than we see in today's society. So you could be indifferent towards money. But when money literally buys you certain freedoms, you can't exactly be indifferent towards it. Of course, you can't be devastated if you aren't vastly rich. You can't be devastated if your finances take a hit, because then again, you're at the whim of money, which is just an item. But like, you have to give a little bit of credence to it, because if you want to experience that life where you are free and you can say things freely and criticize things freely and not be controlled by certain things that are outside of your control, like governments or things like that, then you have to buy that freedom. And the thing that sucks for us as a society is the people we point to who have done that are not good people. The people who buy islands do devious things on those islands. And everybody who is wealthy in the world flocks to those islands. So the people in power are doing terrible things. So you say, well, if I'm supposed to get my financial freedom and buy an island and break these chains, how am I not going to just be like everybody else? And that's because you establish these core principles now and you're not corrupted. You don't give in to this narrative. You have a lot of celebrities, I think, who give in to the narrative that they want to sell. they get to a certain point where, you know, it's closed doors meeting and they say, you need to do X, Y, and Z to establish this narrative or we're going to take your fame away. So first of all, don't be famous. Don't be famous. Don't be famous. Buy your financial freedom.
We are actively trying to like not become famous, but push this message out. Yeah. Don't be famous.
Because for people who are famous, and maybe we take one for the team eventually, but for people who are famous, right, they are targeted. If you don't give in to the narrative that is being pushed, then you are targeted. You're either a slave to the narrative or you're a target. This is the unfortunate reality that we live in. And you just have to discover these core principles and ingrain them in yourself so that you will never turn on them. That's really the key. And it's about determination and willpower, which is a lot of the basis of Stoicism. It's just maintaining motivation, determination through whatever circumstances. We see that a lot in people who are like falsely accused of crimes and famous people who are falsely accused of crimes, where they're faced with the option to stay silent or just be resilient. And the people who are resilient always face the better outcome 10 out of 10 times. So it's not being a slave to all of this programming and not believing everything you see in the media and rising above the appeal to emotional vulnerability while also realizing at some point they might come for you. Like, people won't like that. A strong, resilient person is inconquerable. So there are going to be people who up the ante to try and conquer that. It's a phenomenon we've both noticed in our Stoic journey. As we both get more and more non-reactive, the lengths that people go to get a reaction out of you increases. We've both noticed that in our personal lives. We have personal stories of that where we get into an argument with somebody and we both are not people who get bitter in an argument or get nasty in an argument and make personal attacks. At a certain point, if it gets to a point where that's the level that the person we are discussing with wants to go there, just raise your hands. You're like, all right, well, we don't really need to discuss this then. And in reality, that should make the situation better because you're de-escalating. Like, that's in theory, that should be what the case is. In reality, it just makes the other person more angry. So apply that to a societal level. When you have somebody of influence, whether that's financial or social in terms of fame, and they're non-reactive, and they really do try to apply a Stoic mindset, then you just increasingly see people try to get a reaction out of them. Whether that's people at the ground who are their fans, who are their audience, who are the people who are under their influence, or it's people at equal or higher levels who are trying to diminish their influence. The lengths you go to become inconquerable equal the challenges that you are faced with, unfortunately. That shouldn't be the case, but that's the reality. So that's like the second step then, right? In a society that is controlled by people who are terrible, who do terrible things, who prey on innocent people, who prey on your emotional vulnerabilities, which is an evil, evil thing to do, you just have to rise above it, unfortunately. That's the simplest way you can say it. You have to rise above it. Become inconquerable, right? The man who conquers himself is inconquerable, Marcus Aurelius.
Well, it really sucks because we live in a culture where we just idolize people left and right. We have so many celebrities that just gain millions and millions of followers, not even necessarily on social media, but that's kind of the easiest way to put it for now, but just millions and millions of people who become members of their audience within months. I mean, we can't really comprehend how big of a deal it would be to have 1 million people following us around all the time and like keeping tabs on our lives and whatnot. That's an insane amount of people. And so the more we idolize people, I mean, the more we're kind of straying further away from this idea of, you know, being inconquerable, because the more we idolize people, the more power we give to those people to, I guess, leverage our emotions against us. Because any idol or any like major celebrity who's extremely famous is going to do what they can to leverage your emotions so they can, you know, get more money and more powerful, whatever you want to call it, right? I mean, look at influencers. They will build a fan base and then they will do whatever it takes to keep that fan base that to benefit them, right? I mean, it happens with music artists. They will do all kinds of crazy things just to get their, you know, audience to like their music, to listen to their music and to keep following them. What does it do for them ultimately? It just boosts them up. What does it do for us? It's distracting.
Well, and the most recent example I can think of that is there's literally a YouTuber in Nebraska who derails a train, which is a felony crime, just to get views. That's the point of society that we're at. That's the point of society that we're at. It's disgusting.
Right. Not only are we idolizing people, we are also idolizing just terrible people and terrible things. But like, do it like just for the views, like harassing someone or just going and just being reckless in society. And we find it funny. We're like it's not that deep. It gets to be that deep eventually once it kind of becomes rooted in what we determine to be, you know, funny or not, or harmless or not harmless. Like you said, people think, you know, shooting lasers up at planes as a prank is funny. That's also a felony to do. That's horrible because we give people, and I guess, so not even necessarily people, but we also give just videos power, because now videos, the higher, you know, amount of views that they get, you can monetize off of that. So you don't even have to be a famous person. You get one video out there that's absurdly famous and does absurdly well, and you make a decent amount of money off of it. And that's why trends happen, is because now not everybody wants their face to be up there, but they just want, you know, a little piece of that pie. We're being completely controlled 100%, not only by the people that we are voluntarily idolizing, but also simply by being, you know, just consumers to these apps and, you know, consuming all of this content all the time. If you took, you know, 1,000 just like average teenagers and stuck them in a room and told them to like pay attention to, you know, I don't know, a 30, 45 minute lecture, 99% of those teenagers are unable to do that at this point. We've basically become like the stupidest, most unintelligently freaking, we can't think, we can't process things, we can't pay attention. I don't want to say this without sounding mean, because we clearly have a lot of potential in this generation. But as far as like, I guess the only term that I can use is brain rot. This generation's, our brains are almost fully rotted away at this point with all of the things that we're consuming. And we've become completely dependent on these things. The hardest part for most people's days now is getting out of bed or like eating a meal. That's how low we've gotten. Now, we also have this other side of the generation that's realizing this and pushing back. They're starting to say, oh, hey, like maybe, and just maybe BBC doesn't like actually care about me that much. You know, maybe the bank that like, or the pharmacy that I go to doesn't like actually really care about me that much. They just want to keep, you know, their money rolling in, their power rolling in. We're starting to realize that. And thus we've started to think for ourselves. We started to kind of explore things for ourselves, and that's good, but we have to keep doing that if we want to kind of get out of this dependency on, you know, the idols and wanting to be exactly like the people we look up to. Now I wouldn't say we idolize Stoics, and Stoics were never idolized because they never even referred to themselves as Stoics. They simply lived and people started to follow them. They were not posting. I mean, even if they had an online type of thing back then, they were not posting online. They would not have posted online. They would simply live by example and people would follow. See, nowadays, people don't live by example. They have to post about every single thing in their lives to catch people's attention. They are reaching out for your attention. They are not just catching it by what they are doing. That's sort of the sole difference between the Stoics and why people appreciated them back then and sort of the idols that we have now.
Yeah, well, you said the problem of society is our just rampant idolization. I don't necessarily think that's the case. I think that if we look at historically, we have always idolized people. Even like Marcus Aurelius had his mentors and he idolized previous Stoic contemporaries. Seneca had his friends and his idols as well. The problem of idolization today is not the fact that it's going on a widespread basis. It's the fact that we're idolizing degeneracy. If we want to talk about Marcus Aurelius and Seneca, one of the reasons that we can attribute the fall of the Roman Empire to is the disintegration of morals and the promotion of degeneracy. We look at the fall of the Roman Empire. What was common during that period? The popularization of prostitution, rampant violent crime, bloody spectacles in like the Colosseum and the Circus Maximus, just constant entertainment-based violence and degeneracy. What do we see today? We see streamers who just act like jackasses in public and they somehow make money off of that. We see influencers who all they do is party and waste away and do collabs with other influencers who do the same exact thing. But there's no consequence to that because we all give money to them. We have girls who debase their value only to sexuality, whether it's rappers who just sing about that 24/7 and that's their entire personality, or people who do OnlyFans and feel that that's the only way to make money. That's the modern day. I don't know what the number is of like the popularization of prostitution in the Roman Empire, but the modern day equivalency of that is the popularization of OnlyFans in today's society. So I don't want to say that the United States is going to fall, or the West is going to fall, because I, unlike traditional media, do not want to fearmonger. But the parallels are very apparent when it comes to the disintegration of morals. And we have, like, what do we see in society today of the promotion of family values? We don't see any influencers. Very rarely do we see influencers, I should say. There are some out there who promote traditional family values. Having a family, being a man who protects your family, being a woman who's a homemaker. We very rarely see that. And when we see people who popularize that and say it's a good thing, they're demonized for some reason. Everybody finds a reason to take problem with that. People are more ready to take problem with people who propagate Christian values or family values or even Stoic values. Look at some of the comments we get. They're more ready to criticize that than some girl who does OnlyFans or some streamer who all he does is party, drinks, does drugs, just does degenerate things and acts like a jackass 24/7. But that's not worth criticizing. We should instead focus on this person who says, wow, look, I have 6 kids. I'm a trad wife. Like, this is the life that I love. And we're like, what a stupid idiot. Like, what? Where are we at in society where that has become the case?
You're bringing up this really, this upcoming influencer. And if you are have any knowledge of like the gym community, his name is Togi. Okay. Shane Stouffer is what he goes by. He has an avid gambling addiction. He does cocaine. And he blasts steroids, parties, talks about women in very interesting ways, I would say. But he is probably on the fastest rise of any influencer in the fitness industry right now. And those are the things he does. Just a real life example for you.
Right. And there's like 5 of those, 10 of those, maybe even 20 of those. For everyone like Sam Sulik, who all he does steroids too. So he's not perfect. Nobody's perfect though. But he's not doing cocaine, he's not partying, he's not doing things like that. He's just like a engineering student who's afraid of women and goes to the gym and lifts. That's his criticism. Is the one criticism is he does steroids and maybe he's afraid to talk to women. For every one of those who's by all accounts a good guy, there's 20
down to earth.
There's 20 degenerates who are making like the same amount of money and have the same level of popularity and have the same number of people who are idolizing them,
if not more.
So it's no wonder then that's another emotional vulnerability. Being prey to being a degenerate and being promiscuous is being vulnerable with your emotions. That's what that is. You're vulnerable to your sexual desires, which is based in emotion. Doing drugs, substance abuse, emotional vulnerability, that's where it starts. You initially do have a choice whether to get into those things. And many people fill the emotional voids they have in their life. Instead of fixing them, they fill them with these substances. They fill them with gambling. They fill them with so many things in life. But instead of saying you should get some help, we're like, oh, donate $5. Let's go. Let's see how far gone it can get.
And we do this because it's entertaining. And there is a quote that says, feed them bread and give them circus and they will never rebel. And that has been going on since the Roman Colosseum, Gladiator, you know, like you said, the bloody spectacles within the Colosseum to now where we have football and, you know, sports betting and all of these things. It's the exact same thing, but in modern form.
And unfortunately for Rome, they never recovered from it. We, at least in the West, have a chance because there are people like us. There are many people like us, but they don't get the voice. They don't get the platform that are calling this stuff out. So again, it boils down to what can you control and what can't you control? You can't control who gets popular, but what you can control is your voice and where you choose to invest your energy. We talked about this way back in our celebrity episode. The most you can do is choose where to invest your energy and how to use your platform. And so instead of like many people our age who say, wow, this is entertaining, this guy's funny, let me just waste my life away by sitting on a couch and watching this dude stream video games, instead of doing that, don't give your time to that. Give your time to a Sam Sulik video where he's giving you fitness advice. He's at least contributing something to your life. Give your time to reading something. Give your time to learning something. But again, the agenda seems to be, let's feed them bread and circus, like you said. Let's feed them this entertainment. Let's feed them this, you know, raw thing that appeals to their emotions, to their desires, to their base level of like comfort, instead of providing them with purpose. And wow, they're much easily more controlled if they're sitting there on their couch wasting time watching another dude play video games rather than working out and learning things. That's a very easy population to control. They get fat, they laugh, they chuckle at stuff. They don't feel like promiscuity is a bad thing. They don't feel that degeneracy is a bad thing. Wow, they're very easily controlled. Let's give them substances, gambling, violence, all this, and they'll be happy. They won't question what we're doing at the top. But the man or woman who is uber-focused, who is uber-disciplined, who is constantly focused on learning, reading, promoting family values, promoting good things, being a morally upstanding person is much harder to control. Because then they will question when there's somebody at the top who is a terrible person. They will question, well, why are they there? And if we get enough of those voices and it becomes loud enough, then it becomes a movement, it becomes a wave, and it becomes something that can challenge the status quo, which we need to challenge. There's no doubt about that. We won't compromise on that. The concept of OnlyFans needs to be challenged. The concept of women who only get fame because of their attractiveness and broadly just being open about their sexuality and broadcasting it for everybody to see, that needs to be challenged. For men who participate in that and entertain that as well, it needs to be challenged. I will say that it's not just a one gender versus the other situation. It is both. But they need to be challenged very soon. Or we can see a potential decline. We can see a potential fall. I don't want to fearmonger. But if we get to a point where we have no moral ground to stand on, then what is society going to do? And we're getting very close to that point, which is very concerning.
Well, and I would say that we've already sort of, I mean, we've been on our way there for a little bit. We've been declining morally for a little good while. And to your point, as much as you want to criticize OnlyFans and the people that, you know, are using that platform, we also have to equally criticize the people who are emotionally vulnerable enough and weak enough to buy into those things and support people like that. It's a two-way road, right? Because everything is a business, that means everything is going to be in supply, but everything is also going to be in demand, which means we, as people, have the power to shut those things down by simply not supporting or buying into them. That's the ultimate truth. The only way to stop a giant corporation is to not buy into it. For example, 1907 financial crisis. What happened with the bank runs? The reason that the banks almost went out of power is because everyone almost pulled all their money out of them. I believe it was the crisis of 1907. I believe that is when in New York the bank runs happened. Ren, please check me on that because I don't want to sound stupid, but I believe it was in 1907 that was what led to the Federal Reserve being created, was because in 1907 you had the bank runs. Yeah, cool. So that's the point that I'm trying to make, though, is we, as much as we can complain and criticize, we are the ones giving them power. So the change, that is the one thing about democracy that does stay true, is the people do have the power. We as a mass population do have the power to make change, but it starts with us. It's not going to start by attacking the top. It's going to start as a whole movement of people stopping supporting one thing, moving on to another, and so on. That's how we change. Now, one point I want to make is, you know, we were talking about bread and circus. One thing about alcohol that I want to touch on is, this is another thing, because obviously alcohol has been popular for a very long time. And there was a point where the U.S., alcohol was banned. Okay. And then that eventually got, I think that was the 18th or 19th amendment. Don't quote me on that, but it eventually got reversed. And now alcohol became legal for 21 and up. Here's the point. Why do you think alcohol is so easily accessible? Why do you think you can just walk into a store, you know, fake ID, and you can just get out? If the government really, 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 really did not want you to have alcohol, they would make sure you never had alcohol until you were of age. But what does alcohol do? One, it returns you back to your primal state of thinking. You become more, I guess, savage, a little bit more wild, unhinged, right? Well, if you were in control of a population and you wanted to keep them distracted, what would you do? You would take away their critical thinking and you would sort of return them to that state of mind. Hot take. It's also horrible for you. There are no benefits of alcohol whatsoever. And you cannot convince me otherwise. You're like, oh, it's fun to get tipsy with my friends. Really, bro? Like, I'm sorry, but come on. Also, society has gotten to a point to where, like you were saying, because degeneracy has become so normalized, you start to criticize the people that are focused. Or another example, our diets have become so unhealthy that people who eat normal food, that gets called a diet. So if you're in control, the best way to stay in control is to make people believe that anyone who does anything sane is crazy. You completely switch the narrative. You make people believe that your system is so correct that anyone who dare oppose it is a conspiracy theorist. The definition of woke has kind of changed over time, but they're like, oh, you're so woke. Like, you've really had this awakening of what's true. The point is you get criticized, right? You get demonized. You get shut down. And so that's why it's going to be tough to kind of make a comeback, right? As we started going this way, it's going to be really hard to flip the switch and kind of even it out and then eventually start moving back up as society. Morally, that's where we're regressing. And like I mentioned, and like Ren was saying, we do have the power to make that happen. We do have the power as a community and as a generation to flip that switch. Does it look like we're going in that direction? No, it actually looks like we might be in a lot of trouble. But it is possible. And it really only starts small. That is the only way to start, is in your communities. And then it will grow and then it will expand. But I just think it's very interesting, all the things that are fun, that are temporary, you know, our phones, oh, they're so fun. I mean, that's a big thing. Why would you ever question anything if you were just in here all the time? You know, why would you ever question anything if you could just go get drunk on the weekends and have fun? Not saying that drinking makes you a bad person, but drinking and alcohol, there is no coincidence that it is so easily accessible, especially for young people to get their hands on and to be distracted with. That's all I'm saying.
Well, I also will want to say that it boils down to control again. And an interesting thing of note is that historically governments have been against substances that aren't alcohol. Like, you see marijuana and natural medicines is what I'll term, like, psychedelics and things like that. But now that we're slowly kind of progressing into degeneracy and government overreach, now they're like, all right, maybe we'll let you have that. And so I think there's an argument to be made there where the government and these things that control society will let you have these pleasures so that you can enjoy them while they take away certain rights and certain things like that. Not that the government should control what you put in your body, not advocating any policies there, but maybe the government shouldn't determine what you put in your body. Maybe everything should be available to you, but you should have the self-discipline to say no to things that are bad for you. That's all I'll say about that. But I think, you know, when we end today's discussion, I'll revisit the quote and I'll actually quote it verbatim this time. Evil preaches tolerance until it is dominant, then it tries to silence good. We see a lot of movements for tolerance today. And by no means am I advocating for hating certain things, but we see a lot of tolerance where calling out people for being overly sexual is bad, or calling out people for being unhealthy, whether they are overweight or consume too much alcohol or anything, is bad, and that's not our place to do that. Don't be tolerant. When there is bullshit, call it out as bullshit. And there's a lot of bullshit in today's society. There's a lot of degeneracy in today's society. So call it for what it is, degeneracy. And don't let them silence you about that. Don't let them silence you for your moral convictions. Just spend time making sure that they're right. That's being stoic in a society that is dominated by degeneracy, that is dominated and ruled over, and the politicians are bad people and the people in control are bad people. None of that matters because it's outside of your control. What matters is what you can control. And you can control whether you are tolerant or whether you call it out. You can control whether you are resilient or just give in to everything. So choose to be resilient. Choose to embody stoic principles in your relationships, and soon you will start to see a stoic community flourish. And eventually, at some point, as is the mission of this podcast, we will see a big enough community that is based in these values to push back of the wave of degeneracy. and hopefully we can restore morality to the Western world before it completely topples over. With that being said, this has been this week's episode of the Gen Z Stoic Podcast. I've been your co-host, Ren.
And I've been your co-host, Mateo. And just to, you know, restate, it is within you already to make these changes. You don't need to go and find someone who's going to do it for you. It starts with you. And it may take a lot of courage to go against everything you've been taught and everything you've ever known. But nothing worth having is going to, you know, come easy. So with that being said, thank you for tuning in this week, and we will see you all next time.